I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies over West London, of course. Bluer still skies over Barcelona. They won their title. We're going to get into that. Blue skies, sky blue skies, as they like to say here, over Manchester. Huge weekend in the Premier League. Of course, with City winning, the gap is now 4 points and a game, man.
It's finished.
Pretty close to finished. But we got to start in Barcelona because obviously we knew it was coming and it came. No surprise there, but there's still that sense of liberation, right?
They went
4-2 against Espanyol. And I was thinking back, like, all right, I'm a sucker for Xavi. I've been a big time Xavi fan. I think he deserves a massive chunk of the credit here because you can look at this and you can say, okay, it's La Liga. You really only have to beat two other teams. You mortgaged the future to spend all this money. You brought in Lewandowski, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But when you actually think about it, first of all, I don't know that the newcomers as a group had as much of an impact as all that spending warranted. But what I think is incredible is what is the stability Xavi gave them. Even if so much stuff was going on, the financial stuff, the Enriquez Negreira case, all this stuff, even Pique retiring, you know, that's his teammate, right?
Yeah.
And that kind of leadership coupled with his tactical changes as well, finding that tweak at the end with Gavi kind of in that other wing position, but not really the asymmetrical setup with Balde going up the wing. Like, there's just so much to praise with the job Xavi's done.
Yeah, for his first full season in charge, really, because he came during last season.
November.
For his first full season, he brings the title back for the first time in 4 years. 4 years is a very long time for a club like Barcelona not to win La Liga. So well done to him, you're right. I think it was a very difficult context all around the team from the summer and the leavers and where they were going to be able to sign players or not. To create the strongest defense in the league, one of the strongest defense in Spanish football history. Only 13 goals conceded in 34 matches. It's a pretty incredible record. To be fair, they only lost 3 games. They've drawn 4. It's a pretty faultless season domestically. The Champions League and Europa League was very different and maybe showed their limit right now. The only thing you can say maybe is about the style of football. In the sense that maybe a lot of people thought, okay, it's Xavi, it's Barcelona, they're going to play like Pep's team, which doesn't have the same players, can't do that. And he also had a lot of injuries, Ousmane Dembele and Pedri, especially maybe the two best players in that team, missing out for quite a while.
But to me, that's a credit to him. It's a credit to him that he comes in saying, all right, my DNA, my legacy is Pep's Barcelona.
Yeah.
But I'm going to find a different way of playing when I need to.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, to me, that is the mark of a very, very good manager. Anybody can have a philosophy, right? Especially when you were a part of it. And we see this so often. Legendary ex-pros going back to their teams to become managers, and they go and they do whatever their manager at the time did. You know, not even Pep plays like Pep's Barcelona now, right?
That's true.
And he arguably has the players. So to me, that evolution speaks volumes about
him. Yeah, I agree.
If we were to single out individuals, obviously Ter Stegen, fantastic.
Yeah.
I was wondering about that. Who would be my three key people at Barcelona this year? And I would go Ter Stegen. I would go Araujo.
Me too.
I would go Gavi. That would be my three. You're going to put Lewandowski because... But then when you go that long period without scoring, I think those three had that consistency. And I'll tell you who else I'm putting in there. Two other guys who I think definitely deserve a mention. One is Balde because 19 years old, bye-bye Jordi Alba. We're reworking the team, giving him more responsibility down the wing. And the other one is Frankie de Jong because this is a guy, again, in the summer, every which way they tried to sell him. He was going to Manchester United. Oh, Ten Hag. He says no. And he stays and he becomes a key.
So with Frankie, I think he's an amazing player. I think he would be better now that Busquets has gone and that Busquets is not in that team anymore. It's nothing against Busquets. It's just that I don't think Frankie de Jong could play at his best when Busquets was there in the position that he was. So I expect much better things and a much better even level from Frankie next season. With Gavi, I think I expect maybe too much. But I was still disappointed at the time because he doesn't have, he's 18 years old, so he will never have the consistency maybe than someone at 23, 24, 25 will have, but I still want more from him. For me, Lewandowski with Ter Stegen and Araujo, I agree with those two, because he's going to be the Pichichi, because without his goals, nobody else is scoring. And I would mention Rafinha, because Rafinha, when Dembele got injured, was not at the level as he's hit later in the season. I think he adapted so well. He raised his game, which I think deserves credit for.
You know, I think it speaks volumes about this team that when we try to, you can't single one guy out.
It's a collective,
out.
You're right.
You know, it really was a collective performance. And really, I think that's as much kind of Xavi DNA.
Yeah. Gabi, saw the Barca players being very happy, of course, winning the title at Espanyol as well. So in the derby against the city rivals, even if, you know, not really rivals. And they did this like dance in the middle of the pitch, like holding and having, I don't know, I find it weird, but I can understand you celebrating. But let's remind everybody, there were no Barcelona fans were in the stadium. And then obviously they wound up so much, the Espanyol fans, especially the ultras, that, well, some of them came onto the pitch and the Barca players had to rush into the dressing room, but in fear, really. And you had an issue with them celebrating before even the ultras coming on the pitch.
Yeah, look, I mean, let's be very, very clear on this, right? This is not a case of the ultras being in any way justified for coming on the pitch, right? You come onto the pitch, especially in that menacing way. You know, fortunately, nothing happened. I don't know if one guy came in contact with one Barcelona player, staff member, right? But those people, they should be identified and they should be prosecuted. It's simple as. You cannot do that, right? So, but equally, I kind of felt, and the dance they did where they all go around, and, you know, that's a traditional Catalan dance. Yeah. They do that. What got me is, in this situation, and I tweeted it was tone deaf, and I'm raising the ire of the Barca sphere, but Xavi basically said what I said. Xavi celebrated the final whistle, hugged some of his players, pumped his fist in the air, and then he went down the tunnel. Because he understands, he's from Barcelona, he understands the context, he understands there's no point in rubbing Espanyol's noses in it. Not when you have this imbalance of power. Xavi probably has friends who are Espanyol fans, because guess what? Like, a big chunk of the city is Espanyol fans.
Yeah.
This isn't Rangers and Celtic, right? As much as they try to make it out. Like, this is a different kind of rivalry. And if I don't think any Barcelona player wanted to go and humiliate Espanyol. I would really, really hope not.
No,
because if you're going to do that, you know, pick on somebody your own size, right? Yeah, not this club with these atrocious owners who are on their way to the second division. But equally, I just think it's weird, and it's a sign of the times. And there's a backstory to this, obviously, about why no Barcelona fans were there, which is this back and forth tit for tat between the two clubs. I actually think Espanyol are probably a little more responsible here than Barcelona in terms, but regardless. But it seemed like it went on for a very long time.
Yeah.
And it just seemed weird. You celebrate with your fans, right? Like, I know it's on TV. I know, and they're not there. But you know what? Your fans are a couple miles away in Canaletas, right? You can do it there.
Yeah.
And so what Xavi said, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, like, it wasn't the time to be on the pitch.
If it'd been the last game of the season, maybe you understand a bit more. This is the last time they're all together. Busquets is going to leave, blah, blah, blah. But, it felt disrespectful for the...
So to be clear, I'm not saying that you can't celebrate the title. Of course, you celebrate. You can celebrate on the pitch, the way Xavi did.
Yeah, exactly.
But then, and to see all those staff members join in and whatever, I don't know if it was... Maybe they should have talked about beforehand.
Should Xavi said something? So when Xavi saw that it was, you know, starting to, like, say, like, hey, come inside and...
There were reports that Xavi did send word out there. I have no idea if it's accurate because, you know how it is. There's a paranoia between this. There's a Madrid press and a Barcelona press. Yeah. And they go after each other. Probably beforehand, they should have said, guys, if we win the title here, you know, high five, group hug... And then we go in the dressing room, we uncork the champagne, and then we go to kind of like this with our fans or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I think probably that's what they should have done. I think in those more sensitive situations, because Espanyol felt humiliated. And it's not, I know it's not what Xavi wanted to do. It's not what Barcelona wanted to do.
Yeah.
That was just the outcome.
Did you like Laporta celebrations going in, like in the in the dressing room? Didn't really look too comfortable at running or anything like that.
Hey, look, I mean,
it's a victory for him. You know, he took over. It's true, he took over in a difficult situation, we said.
I think the biggest thing with Laporta you can say is he chose the right guy in Xavi. And that wasn't to be taken for granted, because let's not forget, Xavi hadn't backed Laporta in the previous election, right?
No.
So there was some sense, like, are they close? He was able to convince to convince Xavi.
I mean, he couldn't have done worse than the Dutch guy before him anyway.
It's probably true. Obviously, you talk about the future now. That figure out there that they need to make 200 million euros in savings. Some of that, I think, is just a cash flow thing. Yeah. Some of it, obviously, Busquets' wages going and so on. But it doesn't change the fact that whatever savings they need to make, they need to do it with 25% less TV revenue. And now, because they sold, because of the levers that they pulled, right? They, for those who don't know, they effectively took a big lump sum of money last summer and sold their rights, sold a chunk of their television rights for the next, their domestic Liga rights for the next X many years.
Yeah.
That's going to be difficult to do.
It's a challenge again. And I think they could put all those levers last summer to sign Lewandowski and Rafinha and spend that money, and they won't be able to do the same this summer. So for the people who think, oh, let's do again what we did last, it's not, because there's not that many levers available anywhere, possibilities.
And even if you could, you'd be screwing up the club in perpetuity. Right?
So you need to sell, first of all. So a Franck Kessié, for example, so Busquets retiring, as you say, I think 39 million euros in wages gone. So this will help. Kessié is going to be sold. Ansu Fati, I suspect. Ferran Torres also. Maybe to Aston Villa, who seems a club that is happy to go and happy to pay. I think they need to. They bought him for 55 million from City. They need to sell him for 42 to not make a loss, which is a lot of money for someone.
You're bringing up amortization.
Yeah,
one of my favorite subjects.
Because otherwise it doesn't make any sense. You could sell Ferran Torres if you want, but if it's at a loss, that is not going to help you to re-sign Lionel Messi, for example.
Well, so what it also tells you is, even if you sell him for 50 million, you get the cash, but it's only an 8 million net benefit.
Exactly.
Plus his wages.
Yeah. So it's going to be a challenge. I don't know exactly. They have all those people coming out and being very optimistic publicly, from Laporta to, you know, people who work with him. It's all good to be optimistic now, but at the end, it will be down to how effective they are in all that challenge. So be good sellers for the ones they want to sell. Be clever in the ones they want to recruit, because now I say, oh, we're going to go and get Zubimendi to replace Busquets. Okay, good luck. The release clause is 60 million euros. You can't pay and a release clause, by definition, has to be paid in one transfer of money, not through, you know, 4 or 5 years, the length of the player's contract. So, I mean, good luck with that. And if on top of that you want to sign Messi or re-sign Messi, then it's even more challenging.
Yeah, I think, let's just knock the Messi thing on the head. I mean, we've said before, if there's some way where Messi comes and he costs you very, very little, and he agrees to it and whatever, and it's my last contribution to the club, and obviously Messi would bring in X amount of additional revenue simply by being there, then I think you do it. From a footballing perspective, I'm not sure that, I think adding Messi means that Xavi needs to rip up
completely
the blueprint again.
Completely.
It also means that your two biggest attacking talents are both going to be, you know, 33 and 35, something like that, right?
And 36 and 33,
Yeah. So that doesn't bode great either, because you just have to replace them a few years down the road. But equally, I can't imagine, if you can make this work financially, in like a real way, with Messi taking a massive, massive pay cut relative to what he was earning before, I don't think Laporta can say no. If Messi comes out and says,
Xavi neither. But would Xavi really want? I mean, I'm thinking, okay, this is happening. Messi resigns. He's party in Barcelona. You're right. Spotify are going to pay more money. Nike are going to pay more money. So, okay, great. You bring more revenue. Where does he play? How do you play as a team? Knowing Messi now, and I've seen him play, I've seen every single of his matches in the last two seasons in Paris, and Paris is a very different team. But having watched Barcelona all season together, where does he fit? Like you said, if he's to start from scratch again, to incorporate Messi in the team, That's another challenge as well for Xavi.
And if it brings the Champions League, yeah, it's a massive challenge. I mean, that would be interesting. I don't know.
Again, yeah,
if it's,
I can't wait to see it. But
I don't know how positive it would be for the club. Leaving Messi to one side, I think there's certain, when you look at this team, and again, credit to Messi, to Xavi, in terms of players that they need to bring in. You mentioned their defensive record was tremendous last year. Yeah. One obvious question: do you keep Koundé at right back, or do you sign a right back and go with that Koundé Araujo partnership? Because I know Christensen pulled his way, Marcos Alonso pulled his way, but these aren't, especially Marcos Alonso, these aren't guys in Eric Garcia. You know, there's a drop off there, right?
Yeah, but I think the fact that they've extended Marcos Alonso's contract, which needs to be registered, which is not now because they don't have the space in the wage bill, but will be at some point. If they sign Iñigo Martínez already from Athletic Club de Bilbao,
which isn't done.
Yeah, but it will be done once they've been able to register him and Sergio Roberto's new contract.
And that means,
and Gavi.
That means Koundé is your right back, yeah, for the foreseeable future.
Otherwise, it would not extend Marcos
Alonso. You'll have
five
centre backs, right?
Yeah. So but this is clearly what they've chosen to do.
And then Jordi Alba sticks around another year because I'm assuming they'd probably want to move him.
Yeah.
But he's got a contract, right? Yeah, so yeah, he sticks around to back up Balde.
Yeah.
In midfield, if Kessié goes, and even if he doesn't go, they're probably going to want to bring somebody in because they'll be short because of Busquets.
Yeah. So Zubimendi, I think Zubimendi is a great choice. He's 24. I think he's a wonderful talent. But he costs you 60 million. Again, if you can afford the 60 million, yeah, go for him.
And if the other thing is, if Ferran Torres goes, who's your backup center forward?
Yeah, no, but, and if Ansu Fati goes as well. If you sell the two, yeah, which you have to really, to make Zubimendi, Messi, plus all the others, then you need at least another player. Although Rafinha, Lewandowski, Messi, Dembele. If Messi comes, of course. And you can play Gavi, as we said, slightly higher up the pitch. But you need at least another centre forward. So what, you go and get Aubameyang again? Which, like the rumours game, do you go youth in La Masia? Do you go youth in Spain and try to sign like a young striker who's going to be a good kind of backup plan for Lewandowski?
So amidst all this, and I've mentioned this before, but I think it's worth noting again, Matteo Alemani, who kind of made all this work somehow last summer in his role as football director, obviously Jordi Cruyff as a sporting director, he's announced that he's moving on, even though he's a year left on his contract. He's going to help out in the summer and then move on. He's been linked with Aston Villa. It's funny when you mentioned Ferran Torres.
Of course.
I was kind of like thinking, wait a minute, but whatever. I'm sure Villa can figure it out. If these people were so convinced that they're onto a good thing, they wouldn't be leaving, would they?
No, you're right. We mentioned it when the news broke that Alemán was going to Villa and leaving like that. Is it because he's not in agreement with the Messi resigning? I don't know. Is he because he feels like...
Is it because he can do math and he's looked at the levers and said, we won the title, better to get out before...
But maybe also, it must be really tiring to work at a club like Barcelona, one of the biggest club, greatest club in the world, and having to find ways. You know, in any other club, imagine Chiqui Becerril at City. He doesn't have to go through that. Campos at PSG. I mean, okay, maybe they do the two. Okay. But no,
those
but
are
no,
not
but,
the
okay.
best examples.
Okay, forget those examples. But, you know, someone, I mean, even like Liverpool or Arsenal or Real Madrid or Atletico Madrid.
There's a budget, there's a stability.
Yeah, there's like, okay, this is what you have available. Spend it where you want, spend it wisely. Not go through like, okay, we need to let him go and sell it and save on this and save. We can't buy pens this month because we need that money for... Like, it must be tiring. And maybe Alemán was like, I don't want to do two summers like that in a row.
I want to end on a positive note. And the reasons to have faith. There's lots of reasons to be scared of the future. Reasons to have faith. I think Xavi's shown this incredible adaptability.
Yeah.
I think... You can trust Xavi in the sense that Xavi's intelligent enough to know that if Laporta starts doing something wacky, like selling off more chunks, I think Xavi's going to call him on it. And I think at that point, I think there's enough now, it's gone so far that there's enough Barcelona people, maybe former board members or whatever, who are around, who are watching this, who understand the situation, right? Title one, whatever, now deliver. Otherwise, the screws turn on Laporta. That's the reason to be positive. The other reason to be positive is, when I go back to La Masia, you know, we've gone on about La Masia, this and that. The reality is, since Busquets and maybe Pedro, they hadn't produced anybody other than Sergio Roberto until this generation comes
yeah, yeah.
of Pedri, Gavi, Balde. Doesn't mean there's more people.
Pedri is not La Masia, though.
Well, no, but he came, yeah. sorry, Gavi and Balde, he came very young. I mean, Pedro wasn't either. He arrived at 17, technically. So I do think if they can get that right, that can also tide them over for a while.
As you think, this team is going to get better. Xavi is going to get better as a manager. You know, the disappointment in the Champions League, in the Europa League, he will use that to become better. And I think whether they keep the defensive solidity at that level next season, I don't know, because they might want to play a bit more expensive, especially if Messi is here. I don't think if Messi is there, they will be able to be so solid defensively. But I think this team has a great future, and Xavi has a great future ahead of him, because he's going to get better and better. The team will get better. Gavi will get better. Pedri, individually, collectively, which I think is very, very exciting.
And I think certainly within the La Liga sphere, when you consider that, okay, Real Madrid, we don't know who the manager is going to be next season. We don't know if Ancelotti is going to be back. Yeah. We don't know. Obviously, Modric and Kroos another year, Benzema another year. They're not getting any younger.
Yeah.
And Atletico Madrid, while they've been fantastic the last 6 months, you know, they're still, double digits behind them in the table, right? Mm-hmm. So I think you are pretty well placed. If you make the right moves, you can be successful to get on the pitch. And then it's a case of defending yourself with the lawyers from all these other things, selling well. It's tricky. It's not impossible. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Barca. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Manchester City win at Everton and Arsenal fall at home to Brighton, which means the gap is now 4 points. And Manchester City have a game in hand, and they could be champions as early as next Saturday.
Indeed.
Jules, let's start at Goodison. I totally understood why you thought City might drop points, but it was the opposite.
Completely. Although for the first half hour, I was like, okay. They didn't seem really into it. They didn't. I don't know. I thought there was a lack of.
And then the Gundogan tech is genius.
Like this, bam, bam. 2 goals in 2 minutes. I was just like, wow, what happened? Okay. This is why they're so good. This is why they're going to be the champions again. And maybe go for bigger things this season with a double or a treble. Because just when you think you have them there, you're well organized, you're in good position, they're not threatening at all for half an hour. Then they go and score 2 goals like that to make it 3. Gundogan in great form, even in a team that had no De Bruyne, no Bernardo Silva, no Grealish, who were all rested by Pep Guardiola. It was still a huge win, of course, for them. And well done, because I really thought that maybe in terms of focus, especially, they could all be thinking about the Real Madrid game on Wednesday. And clearly they were not, so I was wrong. And well done to them. It's true. It's true. The first half hour was really slow. And I was like, okay, maybe they're not really into this. And then, bam, bam.
But I think that comes down to individual quality and the ability to focus and make it count. Because, like I said, all the hallmarks were there. Everton coming off the 5-1 win. Everton taking points for them at the at the Etihad on, was it December 31st or whatever?
Something like that,
They were all there. And the fact that even this is a game impressive. Where you could afford to drop points because you still had the lead.
Yeah, exactly.
But no. And, oh, by the way, Erling Haaland, that guy's got hops.
What's hops?
He can jump.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he can. Even that has improved. And meanwhile, Gabby, Arsenal lose at home to Brighton 3-0. Did you see this coming?
No, I did not. Again, Brighton losing 5-1 at home on Monday. No carryover whatsoever. I did not expect Arsenal to be as poor as they were, especially in the second half.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a different team when there's no Zinchenko. We can make all these excuses.
And Martinelli, yeah.
And Martinelli going off. Equally, I think we also have to give credit to Brighton.
They were amazing.
This looks like a team to me, Arsenal, where they ran out of gas. And even, you know, the two late goals came in garbage time. So that has to be acknowledged. But if you look at performance before that, Brighton, I think, were still well ahead of Arsenal.
I was there.
And that's why
it was a masterclass.
Were you surprised that Arteta was so negative afterwards?
No, I mean, I didn't really see what he said. Didn't hear.
He came out and he said, like, oh, we can't play as bad as we did, blah, blah, blah. And the commentator, the interviewer was like, oh, yeah, but you're going to look back later and reflect. And he's like, well, maybe later, but right now this was rubbish.
No, but I can understand.
I can understand it.
To be fair, the atmosphere was, you could tell. And well done to De Zerbi, because the plan tactically, especially, worked. Cole Will on Odegaard, by the way, if you watch the game again, was fantastic.
Jules, this game was more physical than I expected. Yeah. It began with a Gabriel Martinelli body check and elbow on Kaoru Mitoma. And a little later, Moises Caicedo, bit of vengeance perhaps, of took out Martinelli and kind of high-fived or fist-bumped Mitoma.
Yeah.
Martinelli had to go off. Could this have been avoided with some better refereeing early on?
I mean, I thought the referee... on both sides, because even before Martinelli on Mitoma, there was something the other side, I think maybe used to pin out on Saka or something like that, and it felt that it was going to be physical. I don't know. I don't like Madley as a referee, I have to be honest. Not just in that game, in general. I mean, one of his linesmen managed to flag offside Trossard after a throw-in, which I tweeted about and found ridiculous at that level to make a mistake. I know everybody makes mistakes, but I don't accept a mistake like
this. He does this for a living.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But of course, it felt physical. I mean, Caicedo deserved the yellow card. 100%.
Martinelli, I think, could have even gotten a red. That's a yellow to red
and
card.
And same for Martinelli, because that was really out of order, out of control. I guess there was a lot of stake because Brighton's still fighting for...
Yeah, but 7 minutes into the game, you're Martinelli, you don't expect that. I don't expect that from you.
Yeah, that's for sure. Bayern in Germany, meanwhile, destroys Schalke 6-0 and stay a point ahead of Borussia Dortmund. Gab, what did you learn?
Well, I learned that when Bayern score first against a bad team, then they'll go and tend to score more and more. What I like, we saw Müller starting again with Musiala. He's a 4-1-4-1, effectively.
Yeah,
two attacking fullbacks.
Yeah.
Kimmich on his own in front of the back four. Mazraoui and João Cancelo coming forward. It's Pep City from last year.
And Schalke as well. So.
No, but Tuchel has to find a scheme and stick with it at some point, right?
Yeah, but he's not going to play like that every game. He can't play like that.
No, but this is, and obviously it's going to be a different test. But I think this is one where you can work on, because you've got Müller and Musiala together. I think they can play together. If you do that line of four, does mean Kimmich on his own? Hey, that's fine. You know, City managed to do it with Rodri and Fernandinho on their own back in the day. Can these guys do it? If they work hard enough, maybe. Tottenham Hotspur lose away to Aston Villa, who pull level in the table. Jules, Tottenham somehow strayed offside nine times in that game. Is that Unai Emery highline genius or really, really bad movement from Hermanson and Richarlison?
I thought it was terrible movement, terrible timing, terrible passing. I just think... I mean, for Ryan Mason to say, we worked on it and we wanted to exploit it and then have that? What did you work on at training the week before? I mean, I don't understand. They're quality players who just can't exploit a high line like that. I really don't get it.
Also, try something different. Come on. It doesn't have to be mix it up a little bit. It doesn't have to be ball over the top all the time.
Although they should be capable of doing better than that in terms of ball over the top and timing their runs and timing their passes.
Okay. You want to hear a crazy stat, which I learned from BBC's Match of the Day?
Go on.
Since Emery arrived, Aston Villa have caught opponents offside 92 times. The team that's second in that time period, Liverpool, have done it 65 times.
Amazing.
That's 50% more.
Yeah. According to multiple reports, Spurs have let it be known, Gav, that they didn't actually meet with Julian Nagelsmann as they felt that he wasn't the right candidate. Are you surprised?
I mean, yeah. And, you know, I've decided not to buy a Lamborghini because I felt like it wasn't the right car for me.
Okay.
Like, I don't know, the right candidate, wrong candidate. First of all, don't come out and talk about this if you don't have to put the guy down, right?
Yeah.
Secondly, I'd love to know who the right candidate is. And also, how do you know he's not the right candidate if you didn't even speak to him?
I think they spoke, but didn't meet, maybe in person.
Whatever. I don't... I just hope they get the right person in place, because Spurs fans deserve better than what they've been getting for the last 12 months.
Yeah.
Let's stay in London, where Chelsea Nottingham Forest battled to a 2-2 draw at Stamford Bridge. Jules, not much of a performance from Chelsea. But the good news is that now literally everyone is reporting that Pochettino will be the next manager. He has agreed a 3-year deal.
Yeah.
He hasn't actually signed it yet.
No, he will.
When I get to talk to him, I want to ask him, like, if everything's agreed, why haven't you signed?
He will. To give him, I mean, what? There's no rush. He only is going to take over in the summer. So, like, there's no rush.
As well just leave the contract.
He's just there. It's like, it's all agreed.
How funny, how hilarious would it be if they get a call from Real Madrid? Says, oh, look, Carlo's off to Brazil.
It's not going to happen. Yeah. But, and we disagree on this, because I think he's a really good fit. You're not so sure. So we will see. I think there won't be a quick fix, because he will take time. Will he get the time? I'm hoping so again. But I think that works. It works for him because he wanted to come back to the Premier League, to London, in a top club. He's got that. I think he works. It works for Chelsea because he can do really good things with his squad once the squad is going to be slimmed down, of course, because now it's too many players, too much dead wood, all of that. But it will be better. So I'm excited. I really want to see this next season.
So I was shocked. I was at this game, and I was shocked to see João Félix in the starting lineup at centre forward.
I mean, I know, but it's like, you know, Frank Lampard is the coach. What do you expect?
So, like, Vivel, you don't even say, like, hey, listen, like, because I'm just assuming that Vivel isn't thinking, oh, João Félix will be our centre forward next season. Why not play the best on earth? At least somebody who, or Fofana, David Datro, whatever, like, who at least is a center forward.
Yeah.
Why do I need to see Thiago Silva play at age 38?
I know.
I know what he can do. I know he's back next year. I don't get it.
Yeah.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules.
Another rough day for Milan in between Champions League matches, Gab. They lose 2-0 away at Spezia. They are now 4 points back from the Champions League positions.
Really, really bad performance. They changed it around. They tried Rebic up front.
You had to make changes, right? But
you got to make changes, but it's not just a question of expecting more from your bench. But they played more starters than they normally did when they make changes, and they were poor. They were really, really poor. And Spezia's goals came late, but they were fully deserved. Jules, at the end of that game, we saw some remarkable scenes with the entire team, including coach Stefano Pioli, called over to listen to motivational speech from the ultras. I mean, if you get a chance to look at the photograph of it's pretty impressive. Remarkable. They're all just like watching as if the guy's like some motivational speaker. The following day, a delegation of ultras and a bunch of other fans showed up at the training ground. They lit flares, sang songs. Now, every indication coming from the club and from those who were there that this isn't about threats. Pioli called it a positive interaction, but are you comfortable with this sort of thing? Because there is a nasty history to it in the past.
Yeah, and not just in many clubs where ultras are a big part of...
Or even organized fan groups, whether it's France, whether it's Spain, whether Germany.
But it's usually to put pressure on the coach and the players to do better, to do well. In this case, I would think it's like...
In this case, literally, they said, okay, it's been a really, really... You guys have been rubbish, but we will continue supporting you to our best until the end. Now go and enter and get us to the final, right?
But with a bit of pressure in it as well. Like, you know, not a threat.
No greater than the pressure they put on themselves. Yeah, so it's not like, Charles de Ketelaar, okay, miss another goal and I'm going to go crucify you.
I'm okay with it because, as we always say, fans will always be there. Those managers, players won't always be at the club. Ultras, especially, but fans in general, are a big part of football clubs. And I think they have the right to make their voice heard. and say what they have to say, but there's a limit, obviously, to it. And I don't think that in this case, the limit was...
No, like when they went to the training ground, they were there for 10 minutes, they lit flares, yeah. They sang songs, a bunch of women, kids there, and then
so
they
that is okay. When it goes more toxic, then that's when I'm
It off. Just looks weird to see it happening at the end of a game, and it's not just them like clapping. No,
yeah.
You know, it's like they're right under that. I know.
Borussia Dortmund stay a point behind Bayern. We said that earlier with a 5-2 win over Borussia Mönchengladbach. Gab, they were 4-0 up at halftime.
Yeah, look, they're absolutely flying. Shout out to Sebastian Haller. Great backheel goal. Daniel Malin is coming good. And Karim Adeyemi.
Well, I told you.
I'll tell you what. Those three guys contributed basically nothing in the first half of the season. Obviously, Haller was unwell.
Yeah, yeah.
Neither Malin nor Adeyemi, I think, scored the first goals until after the World Cup. Can you imagine if all three had been contributing all season long? Dortmund would be clear at the top.
I know. And Gladbach, by the way, what a terrible season. Shocking season.
It's horrendous. No Marcus Rashford and not much cutting edge from Manchester United, but they do get a 2-0 win over Wolves to stay on track for top four, and they can get excited over Alejandro Garnacho. That was the best part of the game.
Yeah, he's by. What a lovely goal he scored as well. I mean, thankfully for him scoring, because there was better options probably than the one he took, but he scored, so that's fine. It's good to see him back on the score sheets as well, and he's not going to go to the Under-20 World Cup in Argentina. We know that because Manchester United didn't want to release him, like many other players all around the world, which I struggle to understand. But then that competition should be in the FIFA dates, not outside of dates, so clubs can still do what they want with their players. But it's a win. We will not really remember that game for a very long time. All they care about was the win, and that's it.
Do you know that Marcus Rashford has scored as many league goals as United's next three top scorers combined?
Yeah, I know. Is that dependent on him? But well done for my boy Anthony Martial for the goal as well. Gab, we have Eden Hazard sighting. He made his first league start since September in Real Madrid's 1-0 win over Getafe. Stayed, what, 60 minutes on the pitch, something like that?
Something like that. I don't think there's anything to say
Nothing
about this all. Game. Really, they just, you know, Nothing. Win, lose, they didn't care. It was just a question of getting a run out ahead of their Champions League semi-final in the big game against City. Lionel Messi made his return for Paris Saint-Germain in the 5-0 win over Ajaccio. Unusually, Paris Saint-Germain winning at home, which doesn't always happen this time of year.
No, that's true.
He got a bit of a kicking towards the end that led to Ashraf Hakimi getting sent off, but at least the title moves a step closer. But Jules, how was he greeted by the...
Yeah,
by
half the and half he was. Some
the tourists boots. Cheered and the
maybe you're right. No ultras, as we know, because they basically went on strike, let's put it that way, until the end of the season. So he had some people booing, and then the other half of the stadium kind of trying to cheer him to cover the boos. I mean, it was a bit weird. He didn't seem that bothered. I mean, he doesn't show much emotion anyway in general. So he was not good in the game. Kylian was amazing again, 2 goals. PSG 6 points clear with 3 games to go, so one more win. And
Hakimi kind of.
I don't know. He had that go with one of the Ajaccio players who should also have been sent off. I don't know. It was really weird. Well,
the guy was sent off, no?
No. Only Hakimi was sent off.
No, an Ajaccio guy got sent off too. I don't know if it was in the same sequence.
I don't think it was the same sequence. But Hakimi really crossing. That's France. You know, the refereeing here not happy. That's his second red, almost back to back after the suspension. So
is he going back to Real Madrid?
I don't think he's going anywhere. Inter beat Sassuolo 4-2 as Romelu Lukaku scores twice. Gab, how did they look ahead of Tuesday's Champions League game against Milan?
All right. The short answer, not good. And look, they went 3-0 up. Lukaku scored a great goal. And Lukaku did look good. And you want his energy and whatever. That bodes well. The other two goals were deflected. They're 3-0 up. And then Sassuolo scored.
Some changes as well.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, they made a bunch of changes or whatever. But it wasn't, you know, you don't look at this 4-2 and say, oh, a commanding performance full of confidence. No, look, they had a lot of changes. They're focusing on Tuesday. Important thing was get the 3 points. You can't screw up top four, obviously. And they did that. Atletico Madrid lose to already relegated Elche 1-0. Jules, I guess they're not that fussed about finishing second after all. You were like, oh, no, it's so important to finish ahead of Real
Madrid. Yeah, I mean,
they
come
don't
on.
Care.
They do.
Season's over. They shouldn't care.
I could not disagree more. They should have won that game. Morata missed so many chances. It was infuriating, even if I'm not an Atletico fan.
Grbic in goal because he replaced Oblak, who wasn't there. I mean, made a terrible mistake on the goal. Like, you even wonder how a keeper of that, I mean, that level, as in, like, you know, who's a number two goalkeeper for a club like that, can make a mistake, a similar mistake to that. It was crazy. So, no, I think they want to finish ahead of Real Madrid. I think it's important to them. It was just a game where nothing worked, defensively, offensively, but they did enough to win. But didn't, because of mistakes that they made both defensively and offensively, which I think is a shame.
What should be important is simply growing as a team and leveraging the momentum from your last few months into next season.
Yeah, sign a striker, please, a goal scorer. Nicola Fagioli scores a beauty as Juventus beat Cremonese 2-0 to stay second, Gab, at least until we hear, obviously, from the judges. They look pretty good as well.
They did. They look good in that sort of Max Allegri kind of way, course, that he wants him to look good, yeah, right? So solid at the back, effective, physical. Vlahovic wasn't great, but this bodes well if you believe in this type of way of playing that Allegri wants to do. Yeah. Other times, you know, they look good playing in a different way. Most of the time, they look bad playing the Allegri way. Sometimes they look bad playing a different way. So, you know, it's this little matrix combination. But, you know, I think it does give you a list. Of course, Cremonese is second bottom and heading to Serie B. Yeah. Jules, on the flip side, Paul Pogba made his first start in more than a year, but came off the pitch injured after 21 minutes. He can't catch a break, can
he? No. I find it really sad. I know a lot of people won't care and won't have any empathy. I do, because he was his first start in over a year. I think the last time he started was April.
It was against Liverpool for Manchester United. Yeah.
Exactly. And he injured his quads a muscular injury again after 21 minutes, as you said. Left the pitch in tears, which is, I think, really sad. They've built up his minutes, his fitness. They felt he was ready to start this game against Cremonese, where you know you're going to have a lot of the ball, there won't be too much intensity, right, all of that. So it was probably the right game to start him. And yet, after 20 minutes, that happens. I think it's really, really sad. His season is over, of course, now. And he just have to try to come stronger for the start of next season. Leipzig, they're third in the Bundesliga, but it takes dramatic leg goals from big Willy Orban and Dominik Szoboszlai, Gab.
Yeah, so, I mean, talk about, like, late drama turning around. Yeah. And the stakes are very high for Leipzig to finish top four. And so you get the skipper scoring, I think it was minute 87 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then deep at injury time, Christopher Nkunku, stop, start. Like, he's like one of those, like, point guards going coast to coast and on the basketball court. So much electricity.
So good.
Sets up Szoboszlai for the win. Big win for them. And sticking with the Bundesliga, Union Berlin versus Freiburg was sort of a top four playoff.
Yeah.
It's a huge win for Union, much to producer Freddy's delight.
It's massive, Gab, indeed, because now they look really good to get into the Champions League with two games to go.
So you say they look really good, you mean their chances are really good. Union Berlin suddenly the ugly duckling transformed into a beautiful princess.
We can't really sort of, you know, applaud the way they've played football. I mean, it's one way, of course, and well done to them, as Fischer, having this team playing his own way, and it's successful, but it's not really our vibe. But well done to them still, because that was the game to win, to finish in the top four. So well done. Napoli lose away to Monza 2-0. Gab, do the newly crowned Italian champions really care? They're on holidays already.
I don't care. They may say they care. I don't think they should care.
Really.
Now is the time for the warrior to rest against Monza, who, you know, first season up, finishing mid-table. They've got some big scalps under their belt.
Yeah.
That's fine. I don't think it makes a jot of difference going forward.
No.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Chelsea have won the Women's FA Cup here in England, beating Manchester United 1-0. Jules?
Yes, that was Sam Kerr who scored the goal. I mean, who else? She's got this incredible ability to score goals in finals, to score at Wembley. This is the third FA Cup win in a row for the Chelsea women's team, and Emma Hayes, well done to them. And Sam Kerr, who was voted player of the season, where I think a lot of people didn't agree with it. I think she she proved those people wrong with that goal at the far post.
I was curious about this, just because obviously you follow this closer than I do. The people who don't agree with Sam Kerr or don't like celebrating Sam Kerr, is it because she's more of kind of a physical athletic center forward rather than, you know, one of the more elegant, talented number 10s with a pretty pass?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think, to be fair, I kind of agree.
Not suggesting she's technically poor by any stretch, but she's not a flair player.
No, she's not a flair player. She's an incredible goal scorer, wonderful goal scorer. And I think a lot of people felt that they maybe, even within the Chelsea team, some players who deserved it more than her for everything that they brought outside of just goal to the team. But, I mean, we say often big games also belong to big players. And she's got, again, she's so used of scoring winning goals and big goals in cup finals or in key moments to win trophies. And the double is still on for Chelsea. So, you know, well done to them. Roma held away by Bologna, 0-0 at Jose Mourinho. Will that the B team, Gab, fair to say Mourinho's best chance of Champions League football at this stage of the season is winning the Europa League? And he was grumpy again after this draw, saying, even when we were second, I've said, we don't have the squad to finish in the top four.
That's fine. He says what he's going to say. Look, I mean, if they win the Europa League, if they get to the final, I think it's still a really big achievement, showing again his ability in Europe. Yeah. I think, you know, they're behind. I think a lot's going to depend if Juve lose points, how many points they lose, because obviously then a spot frees up. Frankly, I don't see that happening. If I'm looking at this and if I'm Mourinho, I tell myself, meh, you know, I got a better chance going forward against Bayer Leverkusen.
They won 1-0 the first leg.
And whether I play Sevilla or
Juve
in the final, I like my chances there.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I think just mathematically, it's more likely that you're going to get success in those two games with Jose Mourinho to help than you are to get into the top four.
Definitely.
Marseille beat Angers, and back on Friday, Lens go a man down and still beat Rennes 2-1. Jules, is it fair to say that whatever happens, Lens most impressive achievement this season?
Yeah, you're right. I think that for me, they've been the best team, and you know how much I love PSG, but Lens have been the best team in Ligue 1 this season. They've been fantastic to watch, the way they play, the intensity, the press. We've praised them many times, and Franck Hayes and the job that everybody at that club has been doing. They'll be back in Europe for the first time in a long time. I think 08 was the last time, maybe. And potentially in the Champions League, if they finish second, straight into the Champions League. If they finish third, they would have to go through tricky qualifier rounds, but still, will be really amazing, and it's a completely deserved reward in a way, because the season has been great. And once again, my boy Seko Fofana, Paris born and bred, of course, scored a lovely goal, the winning goal, when they were one goal down, with a man down as well. Gab, you're right, wonderful performance, really,
and the best Fofana in Ligue 1, better than the Monaco guy, right?
Yeah. I love Youssouf, Paris born and bred as well. The two Fofanas are Paris born and bred, but yeah, Seko this season has been
okay. Please don't tell fantastic. Me Wesley is Paris born and bred.
He's Marseille born and bred.
Okay, so that's different. Yeah. And David Fofana, definitely not Paris
definitely
born
not
and bred.
More trouble in the Eredivisie, Gab. We mentioned this all through the season, but the game between Ajax and Groningen was abandoned after just 9 minutes following a protest from Groningen fans who have been relegated.
Yeah, and they're really angry at the club. They threw these smoke bombs, which put out, I didn't even
really
know they made them like this.
Yeah, dark.
This really dark black smoke onto the pitch, and you just couldn't see anything. They had no choice. You know, it's hard. You see this from the outside. It's not the first incident that's happened this season in the Eredivisie. I think two things need to happen. Obviously, you need to have better policing. You need to tell people to stop acting like this, and you need to have punishments for people who act like this. Equally, I think the way some clubs have been run, I think it's time to have more oversight.
Definitely.
In the way what some of these owners do with these clubs.
Yeah.
Newcastle are held at Leeds 2-2 as Callum Wilson scores again. Two penalties for him.
Yeah.
But Jules, another ugly scene
terrible.
As a fan appears to run on and confront Newcastle manager Eddie Howe.
Really terrible. The scenes that we saw. And just the easiness. Easiness, you say in English?
The ease.
The ease in what that happened as well. I just can't understand. I mean, obviously it's a life ban, and I hope it's even more than just that. I hope there's some sort of prosecution for this guy. It's really, really dangerous. It's unacceptable.
I think what's weird and scary about this is this guy, he comes over, he kind of like sort of grabs Eddie Howe, says something to him, and then obviously then the stewards take him away, and there's that huge dude with a big beard behind him and the shaved head. I don't want to mess with that guy. It's obviously, you know, here in England, there are no barriers. It's very easy to get on the pitch, you know. And that is part of what makes the Premier League spectacle so great, because you do feel like you're in an arena.
Yeah.
It would be tragic if we got to the point where we had to give that up. So other than giving, you know, stiff penalties and making sure that one by one, every time this stuff happens, we never see these people again, I'm not sure what you can do.
No. Okay, let's talk positives in the Netherlands, Gab. How about Arne Slot's Feyenoord being crowned champions?
I think this is a tremendous achievement. You know, we had this conversation off air, right, about how, you know, it's never a fair fight in the sense that there's always somebody bigger and richer than you, right? In Arne Slot's case, last season, they had a really good season, got praised for the way they played and the results as well.
Reaching the final, of course, against Roma.
Reaching the final of the Europa Conference League.
Yeah.
I think it might say only four guys who started that game are still back with the team now,
right? They lost all the best players pretty much.
They lost Malacia to United. They lost Sinisterra to Leeds United. Yeah, they lost Senesi to Bournemouth. They lost that other guy, the Norwegian dude, to Benfica, the guy whose name I can't pronounce.
Hafrenes,
Wait, how do you pronounce his name?
I cannot do it quickly.
It could be kind of vaguely French, but it's probably not.
You know, exactly.
But the point is, he reloads on the fly, and he's such a good coach that the new guys that come in, it's not like they spend a ton of money.
Amazing.
It's not like they sold these guys for so much money that they went on a shopping spree.
But well done to this the recruitment team as well.
They've done really well. You're a big fan. I was kind of like, but could this work somewhere else? For me, when you see people who are able to win, be forced to reload and win again, to me that is a big sign. Or win or just be successful.
I agree.
To me, that is a good, really good sign that they're not just sort of ideologues with great players. They're also people who can rebuild on the fly, who have that pragmatism, who have that capacity to evolve. So I don't want to say he should leave to go to a bigger club. No. If he's happy there, he should stay there. Mm. If he does decide to move on at some point, I think a lot of serious clubs should look at him.
Yeah.
Maybe even Tottenham.
Since
Julian Nagelsmann is not the right fit.
I think they are looking at him.
Plenty of controversy in Ligue 1 over the rainbow shirts this weekend, especially in Toulouse, where the home side played Nantes.
Yes, that's right. Gabby, some players didn't want to play in these games. So all in Ligue 1 and Ligue 2 this weekend, you were wearing your normal shirt, but the numbers at the back were in rainbow colours, a bit like the rainbow laces that we have in England. Some players didn't want to be associated to that campaign, didn't want to, quoted their personal belief and didn't want to be associated with it, which in a way I can understand, in another way I don't understand. three players for Toulouse, one for Nantes. Some have explained themselves and saying, listen, in what I believe in, I don't want to be associated with this. I think it's a shame, and a lot of the LGBTQ plus community have been outraged by the fact that, for example, the Brest manager, Eric Roy, says things like, well, it's because why are you doing that now when we're in the final sprint of the season? This is not acceptable from the league to put. It's nothing to do with the league. It's the day against homophobia in the whole world. So it goes with it. We're not going to do it at Christmas, or it would not make any sense. So it doesn't feel that this campaign is backed very much by the clubs, who are not going to take any sanctions against the players who didn't want to play. So I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know. It bothers me, but I don't know what to do.
I'm in two minds about this, because part of me says it's really important that members of this community know that the big institutions are with them.
Yeah.
Right? So Ligue 1 as a whole has decided to do this. And then so the institution's there. And so if you're against this, you are against the status quo of football in France, right? Yeah. You're against the status quo of Ligue 1. And so you are isolated. You're in the minority in not being comfortable with the rainbow shirts or whatever, right? And that I think, is a big encouraging message to send. Equally, I kind of think it's a little bit like the poppies. If you go and you stitch a poppy into the shirt, or if you go and you put the rainbow shirts, and everybody's like, okay, guys, put on your shirts, it's how many people wearing them are actually doing it because they're convinced, or because they're just going along with it?
Of course.
How many people may be rampantly homophobic, but they don't like, I don't need the attention. Let me go and put the shirt on anyway. What do I care? I kind of feel like this sort of stuff is more effective when it's an individual choice. And, you know, you still have a campaign, and but maybe, like I said, like they do with the rainbow laces here or whatever. When it's actually printed onto your shirt and you're an employee and your boss tells you to do it, it moves it into another, there's a very, very different sphere.
Maybe. Well, it's playoff time here in the UK because all the leagues from the fifth division, fourth, third, second are all into the playoff semi-final, final, etc. I was at Wembley Gab on Saturday to watch Chesterfield against North County.
The Mighty Spires?
Of course, because one of my best friends is a Chesterfield fan, so we were all there, you know, supporting him. It was an amazing, I have to say, it was a great game in terms of the scenario. It went to penalties after late goals to equalise from North County. John Bostock, remember?
The guy with the long neck, former Spurs star and,
Prodigy,
and Crystal Palace, was
he? Toulouse. Yeah, exactly, that's right. And trying a Panenka in the penalty shootout, missing for the winning penalty. His team had another one after to win it, and they ended up winning it, but it was great. And in the championship, Gabby, Sunderland beat Luton 2-1 in the playoff first, so semi-final first leg. And I know it's not your thing, but I'll ask you about Ahmad Diallo Traore, who scored in that game. Reports suggest that he will be back at Old Trafford next year. He's been on loan to Sunderland and has done amazingly well, one of the best players in the championship this
season. Yeah, as I understand, he scored a bunch of goals. And it's interesting because when you look at kind of how like the core of wingers is likely to shape up at Manchester United next season, right? You've got Antony, you've got Sancho, you've got Garnacho, I think they're going to want to give more minutes to. Yeah. And you have Rashford, who I'm assuming you don't want to play at centre forward.
Yeah,
you
so
want to have him coming
wide
from the wing, right? Yeah. So those are four guys who on paper are going to be ahead of them. So I wonder what the right choice, and that's before we get into Alanga, who I'm assuming they can move on, if they like Diallo more. I do wonder what is his development going to be like. Is he going to move inside, which is a position he's played before?
Yeah.
Not at centre forward, but in attacking midfield.
Second striker or something?
He's still young maybe to do that.
If Sunderland are promoted, leave him alone at Sunderland for another season. In the Premier League, he will start every game. He will get used to it. He will learn a lot. They have something really good. Tony Mowbray is a really good, like, experienced coach. And that would be better than staying on the bench at United and play with the reserve now and again.
You know, I am totally pro-loan, and I would totally agree with that. But there's this perception that, but if you send players on loan, you know, you lose sight of them and blah, blah, blah. Oh, like
so
I said, it wouldn't apply here.
What would you do then? You're not going to keep him on the bench at United if he doesn't play.
If it were up to me, I'd send Sancho on loan and be like, hey, come back when you're good. Come back when you go back.
So Sancho is good enough for the loan, but not Ahmad.
No, but I'm saying it would never happen. No, but I do wonder about the priorities. So Antony's going to be there because whatever,
yeah,
right?
No, for sure.
That's fine. And on the other wing, I got Rashford. I am wondering, if I like Garnacho so much, I guess one of those two, Garnacho or Diallo, has to go on loan, and it's more likely to be Diallo because he already has a home and a manager if Sunderland come up.
Yeah.
The question is, if Sunderland do not come up, do you leave Diallo there another season, or do you find him a club in the Premier League with all the uncertainty that comes with it?
Yeah. You have to aim for the Premier League now, fam.
That's the main talking point to me. Jules, we love to celebrate our Gab and Jules Meets family. So let's do that with our boy, Gael Clichy.
Oh, yes.
Who scored a heck of a goal this past weekend.
Yeah, on Saturday against Sion. He plays in midfield now. He plays as number six in that game and read the game well on the halfway line, intercepted the pass, and then just hits the lob 40 yards into the goal. Amazing goal. For him, who doesn't score many at all.
Well, he told us he scored like
three, or something like that, or five, or maybe six. Incredible goal, really. They won 5-0. They, hopefully for them, going to make it into the Champions League qualifying spot, if you want, in Switzerland, because they're not going to win the league. But it was an amazing goal, and it's good because, as we said, he deserves a lot of credit for the career that he's had, for being still fit and playing at that level now at his age. So, yeah, well done to him.
I think, obviously, because the rule is all goals like that have to be compared to David Beckham's goal against Wimbledon.
Yes.
Or Naeem from the halfway line, if you're really old.
Yeah. This is better because he had to read the game, intercept the ball.
Yeah.
You know, and
he didn't involve it, just come to him.
Exactly. Neymar was in the stands for PSG's 5-0 win over Ajax, who had the Parc des Princes, and images of him making a video call to Luis Suarez went viral, Gab. For a moment, the MSN was reunited there.
Yeah, because Messi was on the pitch and Suarez is in Brazil. Yeah, I guess. Plays for Grêmio, and Neymar's in the stands because obviously he's injured again.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I mean, I'm grumpy. It just says nothing to me. Like, all right, look, oh, your video call. Like, who cares? Like, honestly, like, why is it? Like, this is exactly the kind of thing, right? You've got one guy who's just back from suspension on the pitch. You've got this guy who hasn't played in forever, yeah, and who, correct me if I'm wrong, most fans at the club don't want and don't like anymore.
Yeah.
You have the other dude who's presumably stopped biting people, but also he's half a world away in Brazil. He's got nothing to do with Paris Saint-Germain. And what, we make this ready-made, like, for Instagram post thing? Hey, whatever floats your boat. Yeah. Like, but, like, to me, Jules, this brings us to an end. But this week, midweek, the Champions League semi-final return legs.
Yes.
Who you got?
I've got Inter and I've got Man City. And I'll be at both games, so I can tell you all about it on Thursday.
I suspect most people do. Most people feel just like you. Until then, love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.